Yeshua is a symbol.
He's an example of loyalty. Loyalty to Moshe Rabbeinu. And he gets very, very irate. Very righteous. Very zealous. When these unsolicited, non-institutionalized Nevi'im, Eldad or Medad, who are part of that pool of 72 people who have the prophetic spirit, but only 70 of them are chosen for the Sanhedrin, for the institutionalized Nevuah, for institutionalized teaching of Torah, and all of a sudden, source number Aleph, Vayisharu Shnei Anashim B'machane, Shem Ha'achad Eldad, V'Shem Ha'Shini Medad, V'Tanach Aleim Ruach, V'Hema Baksudim. So they have Ruach, they have Nevuah, they've got Torah to teach, but they're B'machane, they're on the outside, they haven't been incorporated, as we would say, because only 70 have been chosen. Chazal tells about a process of 72 potential candidates, 70 are chosen, Sanhedrin 70 people, Esfali Shivim Mishmizik Nevin Yisrael. So you've got people that have Torah to teach, Nevuah to deliver, but they haven't been incorporated into the Sanhedrin. So they're continuing to tell their Nevuah to teach outside of the box, outside of the system. They're not part of the system. And Yoshua is rightfully angry. And he approaches Moshe Rabbeinu. We'll see later the two deos in the Gemara exactly what they were prophesizing about, whether the content of the Nevuah was disrespectful to Moshe or just the very fact that they were actually issuing Nevuah and Torah. But whatever was happening, Yeshua becomes very, very zealous, very hostile almost. And he runs to Moshe, Vayaretz HaNar. It's not clear the Pasuk of Zion is describing Yeshua. Some Nar, typically Yeshua is referred to as Nar Yeshua, but even if it's not Yeshua, someone informs Moshe. Eldad Umeidad Misnabim B'machana. Again, the word Machana as opposed to where they should be, being Misnabim, in based in Sanhedrin. They're outside, they're unregulated, unsolicited, they're not part of the system, they're not institutionalized. But then Yeshua clearly voices his discontent, his opposition, in a very, again, aggressive fashion, but legitimately so. Vayan Yeshua ben Nun Misharis Moshe, mi bechurav. Interesting that now he's not just referred to as a Misharis of Moshe, but he's a Bachor. He's one of the Talmidim, so he's referred to not just as a Nar, but a Bachor, and here there's a bit of a disparity between an older person and a younger person. We'll talk about this a little bit later. Mi b'churav. Vayomar Adoni Moshe. Subservience, loyalty, commitment, fidelity. Adoni Moshe. Claim. Now, claim can mean a lot of things. It can literally mean put him in prison. Harsher interpretations of Chazal can mean milashon klaya. They should be actually executed. But Yeshua doesn't want to parade them more. He doesn't want to reward them. He doesn't want to accept their nevuah. There's clearly a stiff and truculent opposition being expressed by Yeshua. These are people that should be dealt with swiftly and harshly. Whether that's incarceration, whether it's capital punishment, but they're not to be encouraged. They're not to be endorsed. The nevuah is not to be supported. It's clear that Yeshua is opposed to this whole prospect. And Moshe responds very interestingly. But Yom Elo Moshe, and really there's a dual response. Hamakanea Tali, that's the first part of the response. He really, okay, that doesn't mean jealous. We'll read about Pinchas and Mirtashem in a few weeks. You're jealous when you fight the battle on behalf of someone's honor and dignity. Pinchas was a kanoi because he was concerned with the Kodesh Baruch Hu's honor. Kiddush Hashem versus Chilul Hashem. So, you know, in our terminology, kina means I'm jealous that you have a nicer car or a nicer home. So it's hard to transplant that to idealism. You know, I mean, jealousy is such an ugly and such a corrosive personality trait. So what does it mean? Oh, he's a kanoi. It doesn't mean that. In that context, it means I'm concerned with the affront, the insult to a larger system whose honor I feel has been sullied. Kodesh Baruch Hu, Am Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu. So Moshe is shocked. Moshe is a bit astonished. Hamakaneh Tali, you're taking my battle. You're worried about my honor. There's a bit of a silent, almost assumed question about what role honor should play, because at some point this is disrespectful to Moshe, not just unregulated prophecies. They're saying, you're really so concerned with my honor, and we'll hear about that in a moment. And then he says something else. This is what I want to talk about first, and then I'll get back to Moshe Rabbeinu questioning Yoshua's zealousness about his honor. Me tain kolam Hashem nevihim, ki tain Hashem esrucha lehem. Halavai, Moshe Rabbeinu says. Halavai, not just should 70 people be prophets, 72 people be prophets. Not only should 72 people be nevuim, but everyone should be a Navi. Me tain kolam Hashem nevihim. What's Moshe telling Yeshua? So first of all, it's like a hidden message to Yeshua. I always joke with you, Amir Tashem, I do the dishes at home. Why do I do the dishes at home? Because first of all, my wife will kill me. It's a big mitzvah to do the dishes, seriously. And also, because one day, Mashiach will come. And you know the biggest unemployment statistics? You know who's going to really be unemployed? Pretty much everyone, because there'll be no lawyers. At least in Olam HaBa, everyone will be unemployed. And no lawyers. All you Tikkun HaOlam fans, the world will be perfect. There'll be no more lawyers, no more doctors, no more. Any jobs you get are only b'di'evad in a fallen world. When Mashiach comes, and the spirit of the Ribono Shel Olam permeates throughout every single Rebbe will be out of a job. Yeah, meant to have Rebbeim. It's all one big farce. I should be teaching you Torah. I know you for a year, 2 years, 5 years. You should learn Torah with your parents. Parents should know. Teacher called it Torah Kula, that natural setting in the home. Shinamtam levanecha, v'dibarta bam. We're learning brachas now. So if Shiach comes, I'm going to be unemployed. So I'm planning to get a job at an all-night diner. I already have good things on my resume. I did dishes for, you know, a lot of years of marriage, Be'ezus Hashem. So I already have a good resume. You know, I've already got my eyes set on some good all-night diners that I could get a job in. So Moshe Rabbeinu basically telling Yeshua, this whole Rebbe business that I'm in, you know, I'm the Rebbe, you're the Talmidim, and they're the Nevi'im, and these are the Sanhedrin, this whole bureaucracy. One day, as Yael says, Eshpoch Rusi Yael Paragimel, Eshpoch Esruchi Al Kol Basar. I'm going to pour out Kodesh Baruch Hu says my spirit to everyone. So now we need devices and structures and apparatuses, but think of the larger picture. The larger picture is not meant to be. You know, don't get caught up in the moment. You know, every moment of pettiness is really myopia. You just see the moment, you can't see the broader scale. It's a beautiful medrash that Kodesh Baruch Hu once wishes something and Moshe wishes something, and neither of their wishes will come true until Mashiach comes. What does the Kodesh Baruch Hu wish? Mi yitain, Hashem says in Parshas Vaschanan, I wish the Hayala Vavamzeli Yerasi Kal Yamim, that they would fear me as much as they fear me at Har Sinai, with the thunder and the lightning and the fire. I wish they could have so much Yerushalayim as much as they have at Har Sinai. And this is Moshe's chance to wish. I wish they could all be Nevi'im. Look at the very beautiful, beautiful medrash, source number Hey. It's a medrash that appears several places. Okay. Why does it say twice in Tehillim, Mi Yitein Mitzion Yeshua Hashem, that Hashem will provide all this influx of spirituality from Tzion? So Amar Reb Levi, source number Hey, line 4. Harav Amar Kasadacha, Kodesh Baruch Hu, the Rebbe once wished for this. That Talmud Amar Kasadacha, and the Talmud once had a wish. What was Hashem's wish? Line number 4 from the bottom. Mi Yitein Vayala Bavam Zeh Lahem. I wish they'd fear me their whole lives. That Talmud was Moshe's wish. Mi Yitein Kolam Hashem Nevi'im. Our parts, I wish you all Nevi'im. And basically, Lo divrei harav, lo divrei atamin miskaimim ra'olam hazeh. Not Hashem's wish, not Moshe's wish. It's a fallen world. People are weak. People are frail. They're not going to all have Yerushalayim. They're not going to all have Nevuah. It's not going to happen in this world. Hashem's wishing and Moshe's wishing. But olam haba, mi yitain mitzion Yeshua Hashem. It appears twice in Tehillim. It's almost like a takeoff of Hashem saying, mi yitain, I wish. And Moshe saying, mi yitain. Twice until Hashem, David HaMelech says, Bachlis Hayamim, when we have Yerushalayim, then everyone will have Yerushalayim, then everyone will have Nevuah, but until then you have to deal with different types of people. So part of what Moshe is telling Yeshua is, you know, slow down a little bit. We'll get there. You know, right now we need a Sanhedrin, we need a body, you know, you need a Rebbeim. It's not really the ideal. But part of what Moshe is really telling Yeshua in the second part, Mi Yitein V'Cholam Shem Nevi'im, and this is the message I really want you to absorb. You're right, Yeshua. You're right. All this religious energy of Nevuah being misinvested, being used inappropriately, they're speaking when they shouldn't, they're imbalanced in their Avodas Hashem, they want to say Nevuah and they haven't been given prophetic or a judicial license. Come on, Yeshua, that's our biggest problem. That's our biggest problem in Parshas Baloscha. The people crave to be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. People crave vision. People crave ideals. People want to speak about Torah, speak about spirituality, speak about vision. That's really what's going to crush Am Yisrael's march. That's really going to deprive us of this shot at redemption. Blow so pathetically in Parshas Baloscha, Shlach, and Karach. This is really where it all falls apart. This is the great tragedy of history, because we can still recover. We're still 11 days away. We're 11 days from Israel. If we just take the chance that we don't fail through Baloscha, it's a three-parsha debacle. Baloscha, Misoranim, and Esapsof, and Beloshen Hara, and the Meraglim, and the Ma'pilim, and Korach, and then 40 years, alas, elapses, and history changes. That's really what's going to break the back of this camel, Yeshua, that everyone's running around learning extra Torah, and they have the wrong Derech HaTorah, the wrong Hashkafah, they don't serve in the army. That's really going to, that's the biggest problem facing Am Yisrael right now. Look at the Parsha. I mean, I don't mean mean to be disrespectful to Yeshua, but if I were to be Moshe Rabbeinu, I would say, Yeshua, are you paying attention? Have you been reading what's happening? Have you read about source number one? Have you read about source number Beis? The Misaonanim, the people that are complaining, Rabbi Ozni Hashem, people who are ungrateful, people who find and can pick out flaws. There's always negative to harp upon. You can always obsess upon negativity and find failure in any person or any system. Or you can accentuate the positive in people, celebrate, be grateful, amplify, augment it. That's really the problem, that everyone wants to say their nevuah. That's going to lead to the ruination of Am Yisrael. It gets worse. Vasafsuf, source number Beis, Asher Bikirbo, his Avu Tava. What do they want? I didn't say they wanted meat. They got meat. They wanted excitement. They wanted fantasy. They wanted adventure. They had sustenance. But they didn't have adventure and fantasy. Because what do they eat every day? Perfectly fine nutritionally. Perfectly fine to get by. It was colorless. Zera gad lavan. It was white. It looked like a white blade of grass. Zera is a blade of grass. Gad lavan. Zera gad is actually a type of a blade of grass that had a circular flower top. So the mun was shaped circular like zera gad, but it wasn't even green. How more blasé can you get than an herb that's white? You can't get any more boring than an herb, unless it's a white herb, not even green. Bilam, it's a very famous medrash, and Bilam turns to Balak after he fails to curse the Jewish people. He says, you know what, I couldn't curse them supernaturally, but I know how you're going to get them. He tells Bilam, tells Balak, they're bored. They've been eating mun for 40 years in the desert. Give them some kupos zonos with delicious, fancy, colorful food, and you'll see how quickly they fall. What's the connection between zonos and mun? It's not like they were sexually starved for 40 years. They just were eating mun. No, because people are always craving adventure, excitement, stimulus, difference. Think back to high school especially. You know, when's the next big event, the next big thing, the next movie, the next sports event, the next series, the next constant titillation, constant stimulus, constant entertainment, 24 hours a day. You can always find something. And then the quicker and the sooner you realize that you face consistency, magnificence, and real accomplishment means repeating your efforts day in, day out, the same thing, same people, same relationships, same tefillos, same davening, same learning. To a degree, much of the march of folly, the real wandering of modern man is looking for, and I still haven't found that meaning that was lost in the early part of the 20th century. In the early part of the 20th century, all established meaning came crumbling down in these two horrific wars, and people are still looking for existential meaning. And at a certain point, people began to realize they don't want to look anymore, so they just want to numb themselves and anesthetize themselves. So if I can be entertained 24 hours a day, I don't really have to find meaning. I just go from one game to the next game, from one, you know, exciting movie to the next 24-hour film. And I can alleviate that search, because the search is very onerous. The search is very boring. My days are just repetitive and redundant. But you want to accomplish excellence in life, you really have to face, can't constantly be chasing excitement and adventure and fantasy. Much of our chait, and we look for unrealistic expectations, we look for unrealistic packaging. So much of the celebrity culture that worms at our consciousness, at our purity, is based on, you know, you see these celebrities in the real flesh, they're really nothing special, they're like you and me, but there's a cultural hype that puts overlays a level of glitz and pizzazz and adventure and excitement. They're able to accomplish more than we are in their lifestyles, the jet set culture. It's like you and me, they're average schmegeggies, people, they're no different than you and me. And if you just pull back the veneer, you pull back the facade. So that's what Bill was telling Balak. They've just been repeating the same steps again and again. One morning seder after another, especially the guys who now have been here for a couple of months, the NTA guys, you realize it's not all that it's packaged to be. You come to yeshiva, thunderbolts and lightning. You come to yeshiva, and all it really is one seder after another seder, a tosis after another tosis. That's what real life is. That's what reality is. That's what excellence is. That's what real achievement is. You can't constantly be leaping from one adventure to another. It's a crucial message in an age of entertainment and adventure seekers and thrill seekers. And not just religiously, but existentially, the definition of stimulus is that you get to the point where you're overstimulated, where the bar has to constantly be raised, more provocative, more exciting, the next ride in the park has to be more what's the word, daredevil, you know, scary, frightening, because you reach a certain level of excitement and it becomes boring, so you always have to raise the bar. You're always looking to raise the bar of fantasy and of adventure. So these are people who are bored out of their skulls. Hisavutava. I'll prove to you they're bored. They become idiots. They become retarded. Excuse me for saying it. Listen to what they say. And how can you read this without laughing or crying? Zacharnu es hadaga. Soros dam rabeiz ha-shenu chalvin esrayim chinam. Oh, remember the good old days. You're laughing right now, right? The good old days in Egypt. We had fish. And we had cucumbers and watermelons. Did anyone remind you that you also were being beaten, killed, gassed, burnt? You know, work into the... But at least it was variety. One day we had fish, Monday we had fish, Tuesday we had watermelon, Thursday we had kishuim, Friday we had salin, a different menu. Difference. They're craving variety for variety's sake. And that's when they end up falling into that moral pit, that moral abyss. That's what angers the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Notice they don't desire. It's one thing a person says, I've had enough of this mud, I need some meat. I'm 18 years old, I'm a boy. You know, give me something brown. I've had enough of this green stuff. You know, boys your age like the color brown on their food, not too much green. Give me some brown. I could hear that. I could hear that svara. See, this some of the Southern Hemisphere guys who are noted for their carnivorous habits are particularly smiling when I say this. Okay, come and say I want a good braai, you know, a good South African braai. That I can take. Okay, now we're talking. And what do they call it? What's the beef jerky you guys call it? And biltong. Right? The same mushroom. Have us some biltong. That would make sense. But that's not what they're seeking. His avutava. Just one desire. They don't want to work. They don't want to be bored. So Moshe turns to Yoshua and says, are you kidding me? Again, excuse the body language and excuse the comedy. I don't want to be disrespectful to Moshe, but that's our biggest problem, Baloscha. Halavai. The biggest struggle should be that people have this incredible religious passion and they just don't know how to express it. We've got bigger fish to fry, excuse the mixed metaphor, or the reverse metaphor. This is our biggest problem right now. So when you're young, and I'm not saying Yeshua was young, but relative to Moshe, he was, you get all caught up with, well, that person, he's, look how religious he is, but he's doing it the wrong way. He's to this. He's to that. He learns too much Marsha. Whoa! The world's going to end. He wears too big a hat. He's too yeshivish. Not yeshivish enough. He's too committed. That's really, those are the wars we're fighting, guys. This yeshiva, this hashkafa, that those are the real problems in the Orthodox world. How many people could care less about ideals and about davening and about frumkind, about mitzvahs? Forget frumkind and mitzvahs, ideals, nobility, dignity, value, sacrifice. Whenever I hear the discussions about Taro Amanda, yes, Taro Amanda, no, Turka Charlie, come on, let's get into it. You're a big fan of those wars. I'm just taking an unfair, below the belt, but you deserve it, Charlie, right? Taro Amanda, the future of the Jewish people, yes, no, yes. Are you kidding? You know what would happen if every single Jew went home at night and learned 4 hours and read Shakespeare for 4 hours? No, Taro? You just read Shakespeare 4 hours? I'll tell you what would happen. Mashiach will come tomorrow. Because you know what people are doing at home for 4 hours at night. And it's far cry from reading Shakespeare and Socrates. How am I should be reading Shakespeare 4 hours? The real threat to Judaism is not Torah Mada, but Torah Madonna. Just face it. That's a real problem right now. That everyone, how much of the great works of history should I integrate in my Talmud Torah? How am I? How am I? It's what we should be discussing. The biggest problem is, what's happening in Lakewood, that they're a little too far this or a little too far that. Guys, and Moshe tells Yoshua, and I can't say this because I can't chalila b'chas be insensitive to Yoshua, but I get a sense of, I was saying it's such hard to grow up. That's your bachur. Your bachur in yeshiva, you're very impassioned, very inflamed about your derech. And you look at the other guy, and if that person doesn't follow my derech, the Torah world's going to collapse. The Jewish world's going to be imperiled. Well, take a trip to New Zealand, right? And tell us whether those are the big issues with yeshiva, how black your hat, yes hat, no hat. You just call a vice, don't you keep Shabbos? Call a vice, don't you keep kashrus? So again, you don't want to lower standards. You still want to strive for that perfect blend and find your own perfect blend of the Avodas Hashem. But you have to be careful not to become judgmental, not to become hostile, not to become disparaging to other people. If anything, here's a pasuk to take with you, especially for the boys who are walking out of yeshiva soon. We'll talk about that later. Source number Dalit. David HaMelech says, in Kuf Yutes, Chaver ani l'chol asher yiruha. I am a friend to anyone who's a Yirei Shamayim. No matter what stripe, no matter what color. If it's about Ravon Ishel, not about you, and not about preening around with your from kind, showing everyone how great you are, not about positioning yourself with artificial self-confidence that you can follow it up, but you're really committed to Avodas Hashem, and you're really working and toiling. You fall in such league with someone else next to you that's working and toiling in Avodas Hashem. You feel like here's a common laborer and we're in the same vineyard. So you're a few rows over, I'm on this row of vines, you're on that. I'm working on the white grapes, you're working on the purple grapes. You know, I'm tilling, you're fertilizing. I'm flowering, you're seeding. I mean, at a practical level, especially when you leave yeshiva, whether it's Gush or Karen B'yami, you go back to America and you know you have to and to Chutzlars in England, South Africa. You gotta use whatever Torah resources you have. You can't be selective. Baruch Hashem, you're not selective. Which yeshiva fits me perfectly? All of a sudden, you find yourself on some island, either literally or figuratively, and you know, you can't just be so selective. Oh, that person is two yeshivas less. The person is from, it's an Oved Hashem, is serious about their orthodoxy. Yeah, even if there's one aspect or one day, one hashkafa, you just at just a practical level. Just a practical, forget hashkafas. And that's part of the debate between Moshe and Yoshua. Maintain. That's the biggest problem. Moshe's, put them in jail. Destroy them. Terminate. Moshe's saying, that's really what I have to deal with right now? Do you realize the broader crisis that's brewing, simmering beneath the surface, the explosion of the miraculous that's about to happen, the earthquake of Korach, literally. And you already see the seeds of dissent, of complaining, of this Avul Taiva. That's part of the discussion, Moshe and Yoshua. It's a really, really important lesson. The biggest problem should be that people have too much religious energy. The biggest problem should be, see those, I'm just trying to make it real for you guys. Okay, see those Breslovs over there? That should be our biggest problem. I'm not saying there aren't issues that I have or disagreements. The biggest problem should be that Chabad believe the Rebbe's Mashiach. Halavai should wake up to a world tomorrow. That's the biggest thing we have to face in our Yisrael. Even though I disagree, obviously, with it. Okay, a little perspective, a little proportion, a little put things into the right dimension. Don't get all militant and bent out of shape. The second part of his conversation, and really it's the first part in his sentence, is not just me tein kol am Hashem neviim. Look at that pasuk again. Hamakani atalu. Now this is an incredible moment. In terms of Moshe's anava, I'm not going to talk about Moshe's anava tonight, but part of Moshe's humility in the parsha ends with the Ish Moshe anav miod. He doesn't have to fire back at anyone. People are, at some level, being disrespectful to him. There are two days in Gemara Sanhedrin, source number Zion. Next page. What was the content of the nevuah? According to one day, they were actually being very disrespectful to Moshe. They were prophesizing that Moshe's going to die. According to the other day, they weren't talking about Moshe's dying, they were talking about something else. But again, they were prophesizing, as we would say, in Moshe's face. They weren't respecting his turf. They weren't asking for license from Moshe Rabbeinu. Especially so horrific after, that was partially the chet of Nadav and Avihu, so you'd think they'd learn, right? This was right after Shemini, right after Parshas Nasa, so you'd think it's just the Nadav and Avihu being Mar Halacha b'fnei Rabban, you get the message, wake up and smell the coffee, and it's still Mar b'fnei Moshe Rabbeinu. Either way, it was insulting and disrespectful to Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe Rabbeinu turns to Yoshua and says, Hamekanei Atali. Not just that Moshe doesn't have to, and one of the things that always impressed me about Rav Lichtenstein, so many people have said whatever about him. You know, he's this, he's that, he's that, he's this. He never felt the need to respond, never felt the need to lash out, to retaliate, to say something negative. An incredible, incredible midah. I think one of the ways you can tell, you know, to a person who's a Talmud of Rav Lichtenstein, or I'm sure there are other Gedolim that have showcased, but somebody I think, oh, he's something really picked up. Say this, say that, they're to this, yeshiva's this, he's this. Okay, you don't always have to. Now love him, ve'enim olvim, the Gemara says. You have the ability to take a shot, as you said, your solar plexus. Now love him, ve'enim olvim. You can be insulted without insulting back. V'avav k'tzeis Hashem ish b'gurasa. So the Gemara says here, as beautiful as the rising sun. Because you only appreciate the sun's beauty before, you know, when it's suppressed underneath the horizon. That's when you see someone's true color. When they allow somebody else to take, you know, center stage. You can't really appreciate the sun at noon. To wait until you can see the sun underneath the horizon at sunrise or sunset, and then you really see the beauty of the sun. you really see someone's beauty when you let they let other people, you know, suppress them and occupy them, not in a self-victimhood way or self-flagellating way, but. So Moshe is humble, and this is basically the Ramban. If you want to see the Ramban, I didn't put it here, but Ramban talks about the smichas aparshios between Amitani Atali and Ishmael and Amiot. This is the tie-in, that Moshe was so humble, he didn't have to shoot back. It wasn't just a myth of self-denial, he knew who he was. The part of humility is not only to defending yourself to what this one says or that one says. And I always wonder, what would a politician be like if he didn't always have to retaliate? So many times, so much of the headlines and the news grabbing is they'll say, oh, did you hear what so-and-so said about you, or so-and-so said about your law or your proposed legislation? And everyone's always getting, you know, into food fights and tit-for-tat, and they just say, okay, so-and-so's opinion. I'm sure you can think probably of a few politicians that conduct themselves with such dignity. But, you know, raising the discourse, raising people's moral sense of self, the way you talk about others, puts people in higher moral ground, higher moral territory. Show respect, not pettiness, not dissent, not discord. So much of it, okay, fine. But there's something more. And it's a very hard thing to say. I want to make sure I say it the right way because it's very, very delicate. Moshe Rabbeinu says, you know something? If that's going to be the only card you play, Kavod Rabbanim, because that's really what it's about here. It's Kavod Rebbe Kumar, Abach Kumar Shemayim. That's what Yeshua is really upset about. They're not being Mechabed you, Moshe. Moshe says, you're going to pay a price. The price you pay for exorbitant or excess kavod rabbanim is you don't give people room to self-express. And that's what's really at stake here. They want to express their nevuah, but it's disrespectful to Moshe. And the true respect to Moshe would be to submit their own voice, their own creativity, so that the mechabed the rab, mechabed Moshe Rabbeinu, either because their nevuah is going to speak unfavorably about Moshe, or because they haven't received permission from Moshe. Now they're wrong, don't get me wrong, they're wrong, but this question is a really, really big question. The more kavod you give to Rabbanim, by definition, the more you suppress your own creativity. You know, you want to be, if you think on your own and learn to think on your own and develop your own ideas, so you become empowered and you're less submissive and less subject to the authority figures. Where do you draw the line between samchus Rabbanim, or a word that a lot of people use, and I talk about this freely with people who are supporters of the yeshiva, who are healthy critiquers of the yeshiva, kfifus l'rabbanim, you kafuf to rabbanim. Or where you draw the line between empowering people to have their own personal stake in Torah, their own personal view in Torah, and the more personal the view, the more personal the Torah will be, because there's nothing like saying chokeinu v'sarasecha. And you have to learn to draw the line. So for example, I don't know the answer to this, I'm just trying to give you a yardstick, and everyone's going to have to adjust and calibrate properly. I know that in America and Chutz La'aretz, I haven't really been as much to Australia, certainly not to New Zealand, South Africa, but in Chutz La'aretz, that Kavod Rabbanim card is played a lot more. Where Rabbanim are seen and there's a lot of Kavod. I don't even think it's something the Rabbanim demand necessarily or solicit. It's just that's the culture. Okay? George in England, and suddenly there's an aura of Rabbanim and the way they should be treated, the way they should dress, and the way they should be seen, they should conduct themselves. But what happens is there's a displacement of personal onus. You know, if my rabbi is so holy and I respect him so much, then that's my ticket. And what it really should be is if my rabbi is so holy and I respect him so much, that should prompt me to more courageous behavior and more dedication. But it doesn't always work that way. Very often it's vicarious. And in many modern Orthodox circles of past generations, it really did become displacing of personal response. My rabbi is a very, very holy man. He's so holy that the rabbi jokes are almost part of that culture. You know, the rabbi can go toe-to-toe with the preacher and then the priest. And going to, you know, they're part of the same joke. You know, we've arrived. We're part of the same culture. You know, what about you? They're not going to get to Olam Haba because your rabbi was a really, really great rabbi, a really saintly person. It's going to be about you and your Yirat Shamayim and your Chesed and your Talmud Torah, your Shmiras HaMitzvos. On the other hand, a rabbi is a conduit, and he teaches you Kavod Hashem and Kavod HaTorah, and Kavod HaTorah in abstract. What does that mean? Kavod HaTorah in the real. You know, Charlie studied Yeshivas Keren B'Yavne, so the saintly figure of Yeshivas Keren B'Yavne, I'm sure you've heard endless stories about him, of Goldberg Zechasadik Levach, not the one that most of you know, but his uncle, the founder of the Hasda movement, like we call him the godfather of the Hasda movement, he really started all the Hasda movement. And he really was very assertive in expecting Talmid. I'm sure you heard stories to be Mechabed him, but it wasn't egotistical, it was self-serving. It was that generation that said, I'm going to teach you Kavod HaTorah by teaching you to be Mechabed me. You know, just to whet your appetite, excuse the metaphor. You know, he was once giving a shir klali, And he asked the boy for a glass of water. So the boy went to the fountain, brought a pitcher of water and a glass, put it down in front of Rav Goldrich, the Kohen Levracha, and then sat down. So Rav Goldrich waited for him to sit down. He said, now come back up and pour it for me. Now, that's not something that I was trained for. Bukhan Singh didn't really train us in that type of Shema Shtamei Chachamim, and I'm sure he can point out, we once asked Rav Aaron, like, why don't you learn? I remember being in this room having, you know, almost wrestling matches with Rav Aaron. We wanted to take his sperm back to the base of Medish. He wouldn't let us. He wouldn't let us serve him. He said, Rebbe, don't you know you're depriving us of Shemesh Talmid HaChachamim? So you know what he said? He said, I know, but I just can't. I know that I'm depriving you, but I just can't let you serve me. I can't. So where do you draw the line between the two? But there's definitely a line. There's definitely a breaking point, tipping point. And somehow your life has to be a blend of the two. And too much kfifus rabbanim, and your voice is eliminated. Your voice is annihilated. Because it's all about what the Rebbe is saying, and his Torah, and his hashkafa, and his belief. Too much personal empowerment, and you go awry. Just wander. Rabbanim, no more Torah than you. And they're meant to, this man has to be, certainly in the field of halacha b'chlavi. You can't start self-posketing and self-arbitrating. And even in the field of hashkafa, and certainly major policy decisions, I don't think in modern orthodoxy there's enough das Torah. I'm not a fan of Das Torah. I don't think you should completely submit every single non-halacha question to a Torah opinion. But there should be Torah consultation. The major decisions in your life should be passed by Rabbi. For sure. It's like that repulsion. And we've created a culture of self-arbitration, self-mediation. You do what you want. How could that be? I ask Rabbanim, who I look to, Torah personalities, and I reach junctures in life. Just, what do you feel about this? A wise decision, not a wise decision? We've created a society of self-arbitrators. That's part of what Moshe is trying to adjust in Yoshua. Hamakanea Tali, you know, it's going to be respect Moshe, respect Moshe, respect Moshe, respect Moshe. So everyone's going to lose some of that in personal investment. I'd rather, at this point, Moshe says, not to affirm or validate what they're doing. There's no affirmation here. But to come down too hard on them, start punishing them, making a public spectacle, El Dar Omeda, we're going to hang them high at dawn. Everyone's going to be timid. No one's going to search Hashem on their own. No one's going to come with their own chiddush. No one's going to find their own personal blend. What are you going to do for Torah, guys? There are 20 people in this room. You're just going to spit back our Torah like robots and parrots? So then in 20 years from now, the state of Jewry will be the exact same thing of Torah Jewry. Or some are going to get up and dream and say, I can make a difference. We can't make a difference by being me. Or any other Rebbe you meet, you have to make a difference by being you. It should be obvious to you. Greatness doesn't lie in mimicking and parodying other people. So Moshe is saying, they're wrong, but to clamp down so hard right now on them, for my kavod, forget the personal investment. I know where to draw the line, but I just want to sensitize you. It's not such a simple equation. And if you find yourself veering towards one extreme, you have to self-correct. Find yourself being too independent-minded, make sure you reintroduce submission to rabbinic authority. Make sure you have rabbanim that can anchor you. That you can, even if you check in, sometimes guys just Facebook me, you know, just to say this is what I'm doing. That's important. Just the fact that you feel is a moral sounding board. You want to sound off with the Rebbe. Yeah, I know you don't have time to answer. And most of the time what they're doing is appropriate, is balanced. But just to know, you don't just develop your own path in life. That's part of a masara. That's part of, on the other hand, if we just create a world of submission, then we're courting mediocrity, and we're not really moving ourselves forward. Anyway, Lichtenstein's 80th birthday is coming up next year. There's going to be big celebrations. Be'ezus Hashem, 70th birthday. So we all got together. It's either, I think it was Lag BaOmer or Yom Yerushalayim, and Yerushalayim is Erev Shabbos. So what do 3,000 Grish people do when they get together Erev Shabbos on a stifling hot day? Speeches, 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 speeches. I'm being, you know, Charlie doesn't know my humor. He thinks I'm like, sacrilegious. So speeches, 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 speeches. And then the keynote speaker was Rav Amital. It was like 2:30 in the afternoon. Everyone was stifling hot, you know, sweating away. Shabbos is coming. So Rav Amital always, Zichron of Bracha, always knew how to capture the moment. So you knew how to bring the house down in one sense. He got up and he said, I'm not going to speak lengthy. I'll tell it to you in English. Then I'll switch into Hebrew. He said, I'm going to give lecha, I'll tell you, Ma Avdel Ben Rav Lichtenstein L'Shar Rosh Yeshiva. What's the difference between Rav Aaron and other Rosh Yeshiva? He said, Shah Rosh Yeshiva Rotsim Chasidim. Most Rosh Yeshiva want Chasidim. Rav Lichtenstein Rotsim Talmidim. He wants Talmidim. Ma Avdel Ben Chasidim Le Talmidim. What's the difference between Chasidim and Talmidim? He said, Chasidim Makshivim Le Kol Davar Shah Rav Omer. Chasidim listen to everything the Rebbe says. Talmidim Makshivim Le Shum Davar. They listen to nothing the Rebbe says. That's a Talmud. That's a Talmud. I'm thrilled when a Talmud disagrees with me. As long as it's L'Shem Hashem and Rishma, that means it's picked up. What I'm trying to give him is that you can't always, let your Rebbe make the decision. Of course, in Halacha Avada for sure, in Hashkafa for sure, but and obvious, no-brainer policy decisions. But in terms of, what you're going to do with your life and how you're going to change Torah and how you're going to excel in Avodas Hashem and to find that little spark in you and how you're going to really be committed as a passionate Avodas Hashem in life. So there are two very intriguing subplots taking place in Moshe's response to Yeshua. You see this, again, excuse my expression, almost youthful exuberance and intensity and passion and zealousness and destroy them! Eliminate them! Incarcerate them! Moshe says, slow down. First of all, that should be our biggest problem right now. Too much spirituality. Too much frumkeit. And I wish I woke up in 10 years. I wish my eyes, ve'enenu techazena, my eyes should see a world in which everyone is running to learn and to do mitzvahs, and the biggest problems are too much. Oh, what a world it would be to live in. Second thing is, it's not just about protecting the covenant of the Rebbe. That has to be protected, not just for the Rebbe, but as the heart and the essence of healthy growth and balanced growth in religion. But there has to be a balance between the two. It's really hard to draw that balance. Really, there's no one magical solution. Every yeshiva tries to experiment, and obviously one will come at the cost of the other. And where anyone who's anything today in Eretz Yisrael in the secular world, 50 and above, learned in the Chevron Yeshiva 30 years ago. Chevron Yeshiva is a gadol factory. They made gedolim because they encouraged independent thinking. A lot of people went off the derech. That's where the gedolim are coming from. It's an extension of the Sabbat Yeshiva. I'm sure your Rebbe can tell you a lot about that yeshiva. How do you draw that balance? Well, I'm just telling you, you have to find that balance. If you find yourself veering, you're too independent-minded a person, it's really important that you restore some of that rabbinic anchoring. And authority, not just rabbinic, but it could be a father, it could be a grandparent. Listen to people, listen to what they have to say. Take good advice, solicit advice. And when you're young, you could be a little foolhardy. You could pay real prices down the line for your folly. I've got to do it myself, I know myself. You can pay real heavy prices. No one's trying to submit any system on you. No one's trying to oppress you. Absolutely, we have enough respect in the Rebbeim here that we respect your dignity and we don't treat you like infants and we try to give you healthy, objective, balanced responses. On the other hand, don't get caught up in a culture in which Kavod Rabbanim becomes the only ethic because Moshe is telling Yeshua too much of that and you won't really have Nevi'im. You need Nevi'im. You need people who dream. People who have enough courage and self-sacrifice to really do something brave for Hashem and brave for Am Yisrael, not just get caught up in the orbits of self-interest, because that's what most people are. What profession am I going to take so that I'll make my money and have my, it's comfortable life? That's what your life's about. Just to have comfort, security. It's a honor. Where's your ideal? What ideal do you live for? It's a good question to ask yourself when those who are leaving yeshiva. The longer you can answer that question, the better your life will be. I'm going to stop you on the street in 30 years and say, what ideal beyond yourself for the Rabbanu Shlomo are you living for? So you can say it's Talmud Torah, and you can say it's Am Yisrael, you can say Eretz Yisrael, you can say Shemir Tzimtzum, you can say I want to make a family of B'nai Torah, whatever it is. But it can't be about you. It can't be about your own so that I'll have a larger salary and a longer vacation. That's not an answer. So I only got one third of the way through. The second third, because all these are really, really important topics, and I'm not even going to get to the third topic, but we'll get to the second topic. Remember those two nuns in Parshas Balosra? The upside down nuns, this little Parsha by Ibn Saharon. So Rashi says, it's based on a Medrash. Okay, I tried to, the Bar Ilan program doesn't really have double nuns, so I just photostated the psukim for you. Banan Hashem Eliham Yomam, Minasam Min Amachana, they travel from Har Sinai. And then a break in the action, two psukim. One nun, Vahibin Saran Vayom Hashakum Hashem Yifutse Vecha, Vunucha Yom Hashiva Hashem Rivo Salfi. So about the movement of the Aron. And then the next nun, and then they start complaining and everything goes south. Everything gets sour. So the Medrash says that these double nuns with like a nice psukim about the Aron, Vahibin Saran Aron, Vunucha Yomar, separates tragedy from tragedy. Disaster from disaster. The second disaster after the psukim is in the Zonin, and the Asaf Sof, and everything else. But what happened before that? You read through Parshas Balosva. before these two grapes, or from these two magnificent sukkim, you don't really see anything terrible. They travel from Har Sinai. They were told to travel from Har Sinai. It's enough. They've been there a year minus 11 days. They were already at Har Sinai from Vav Sivar, Aleph Sivan, the first year of Yetzias Mitzrayim, until 11 days backwards would be 19 year. They travel from Har Sinai 19 year, the second year. They've been there long enough. Time to move on. That's what the Pasuk says. Look at the Pasuk. Anana Hashem Alehem Yomam Ben Asa Min Amachana. They travel. So the Medrash fills us in. What happened? Amar Lehem L'Yisrael, Source Bays, Part 2, Line 2, Mahalach Yom Echad. Moshe said, travel from Har Sinai a day. Time to start moving. Go travel for a day. They revved up their engines. They traveled for 3 days. We got to get out of this place. We got to get out of here. It was so terrible. Because they got to Har Sinai a year ago. And the whole year they get mitzvahs. Gotta get out of there quickly. Gotta get make off like a bandit. Who knows if we stick around longer, more mitzvahs and more mitzvahs. We got 613. Who knows if we stick around Har Sinai, the vicinity, it could go up to 813. Let's give Hashem the slip, as we say in Brooklyn. He told us a day, I'll go 2 days. Give Hashem the slip. So they were supposed to travel a day, and they traveled 3 days. Well, this is bad. Running away from Torah. Source number of A's. I want everyone to look at these words. Kitino kabareach niveis hasefer v'ratz. Like a child. When the bell rings, you run. Bell rings, you run. Kitino ka yotze niveis hasefer. This has become a catchphrase. Kitino kabareach niveis hasefer. Hashem told you to leave Har Sinai. You don't have to rev your engines. That's the point, guys. The obvious pertinence to the guys who are leaving yeshiva aside. We'll talk about this. A lot of your success in Avodas Hashem has to do with your attitude and your body language. Sometimes you have to leave. But you should leave wistfully. You should leave with a sense, I wish. Shifti b'veis Hashem kol yimecha. It's a good pasuk to take with you. Sometimes you have to take sukkim in your pocket. And always say them to yourself. Shifti b'veis Hashem kol yimei chayei. Do you really believe that? And even if you don't really want to be in the house of Hashem kol yimei chayei, do you want to want? I mean, if I could put a pill in front of you, and you take that pill, and magically, you would crave nothing but the b'veis Hashem, would you take the pill? I hope everyone would grab it. Don't tell the Education Board of Israel, not that one exists, that your Rebbe is offering you pills. In America, I'd be sued for that. Right? Ah, you said the word pill. Legal suit. Baruch Hashem, we're in the Wild West Bank, you know, no laws. Here's a good bit of advice, okay? For the rest of your life, practical, let's get practical for a moment, okay? I promise you, follow this advice, you'll be on safe territory. So Charlie's going to be angry because he came to Gush for some Gush advice. Is it sophisticated? I'm not so sophisticated. I'm a simple Rebbe. Okay? Every time you're in shul or a base matters, walk out backwards. Or at least look at the Aron HaKodesh. Or do something for yourself to tether your... You have to leave, and I even want to leave. But as they say in sports, I'm leaving some play still on the field. I'm still leaving. Put a picture of the yeshiva on your wall in your dorm room. Every day when you leave, look at the yeshiva and kiss your mezuzah and then walk out. Okay, so you're a different stage in life. Your choice. You can. Let's get down to the fancy things. Freedom of choice, where you should be, different. I'm not going there. Just saying, just give yourself a sense of longing. It's the Beis Hashem. There's something called Har Sinai. I may have to leave, but I certainly don't want to be Kitino Kabarech Mebeis HaSefer. I don't want to be Tino Kabarech Mebeis HaSefer. It's attitude, obviously. It's not by okay, I'm retiring. I'm going to walk out. I'm going to run backwards. I'm going to practice my backpedaling really fast. I'm walking backwards. It's not just how you walk. It's the attitude. But I'm assuming that the physical experience will correspond to an inner wistfulness and inner longing and inner nostalgia for something. That's why physical faces are so important, you know. All the boys who are leaving, go to the office, get a picture of Lichtenstein, get a picture of Zevi Rebbe, you're inspired, get a picture of the base matters. Put it on your wall. You can walk into my room at home. Walk into my study, there are six pictures of people who inspired me. Rosh Hashiva, the Rav, my grandparents. Zadia, named after. It's not just all abstract ideas. Ideas from ideas, here and there, ideas come and go. It's palpable, real anchors. It's a halacha. I'm giving you a halacha. I don't know what the sheet is. But it's a halacha here, okay? Source number, hey, you're learning brachas. Source number, it's on the first source of the second page. Amr of Chelba, Amr of Huna, Hayotim Beis HaKnesses, Al Yafsi Yafsi Agasa. You shouldn't run quickly out. So I'm being a little more machmer than Rav Huna. Not just you shouldn't run out, which is also a problem. Before we get to the walking out backwards, let's get to the people who daven the end of davening in the back of shul. Who say Aleinu by the door. Okay, that's a malaise. That has to end. Okay? No one that has been through any yeshiva should be a back of the guy during Aleinu, back of the shul during Aleinu guy. That's just intolerant. Okay? Part of tefillah, the little things. And really, if you want to train yourself in tefillah, just like any sport, I'll put it in your time. You can't be just a dunker who does 360 dunks. You have to learn how to play defense and set picks and know how to run this post play. And it's the details. With my kids, it's the details. I tell them how to stand during davening if they're leaning over, have to stand upright, their clothing should be appropriate. They're not allowed to leave their seat till after Yigdal. Why Yigdal is so holy? Yigdal is a davish of Kedusha. No, but this is until after the speeches. There's a sense of Kavanah Tefillah. And it's a very, very, very slippery slope. Once this detail goes and that detail goes and it all starts to fall apart and you find yourself blah, 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 blah. Welcome to the life of the babblers. Walk in your Babel, towers of Babel. Walk here in Babel, walk there in Babel. It's your whole life of tefillah. So it's about being quiet and sure. Let me put it to you this way. You can't guarantee Kavanah during davening. I can't guarantee you Hatzlach and tefillah. I'm the last person. I don't succeed every tefillah. But I can, and you can guarantee to give yourself every best chance. Who knows what's going to float into your mind in today's world? With everything you're seeing, and the pace of life, and the frames per second that your mind is processing, and the internet, no one can control Kavanah. You're learning Shema, you have to have Kavanah during Pasuk Rishon, we're getting up to that Gemara. But you give yourself a fighting chance. So here's a fighting chance. You come in early. Fighting chance. Not rushing in. Leave at the end. Not always. You have brain surgery that day. You need to catch a train to their death. The day you have to leave early. But day to day, you leave like a... And you just see there are people that get it right. They're not big tzaddikim necessarily. They just have an inner compass. They just get it right. They're respectful people. Come on time. Leave properly. Don't talk during davening. Daven as much as you can in Makom Kavod, even though today it's very difficult. All the externals you can control. Who knows if you can have Kavanah, but at least you're giving yourself the best chance and putting yourself in play. Okay, now you can succeed. Same thing. You're leaving yeshiva. I should have given this year a few weeks ago. That's how you're going to leave yeshiva, going here, traveling here, taking off a long weekend, missing a Seder here, missing a davening there, adopting the evening. That's your bookend. So you want your experience to end? You have a sense of, excuse me for saying this, another civil suit coming against me. It's a sense of tragedy, leaving yeshiva. But life is tragic. Okay, it's what it means to be fallen. So now you live under tragic circumstances, but you have to embrace those circumstances and try to amend them and try to improve them. Life isn't tragic. I mean, that's what man is put on this earth to do, to become a lawyer. So-and-so Esquire, that's really what Hashem created the world, to put the word Esquire on your nameplate. That's really what it's about. Another investment, another hedge fund. There's something deeper. And obviously that deeper access is to the world of Torah and spirituality. And Avodah Hashem in the purest sense, not just taking Torah to the world, but in the pure sense of ritual and Torah. Okay, so your mother, your parents, life, reality. No one's telling you, we're not rethinking your decisions now. Okay, but next time you're at a scene, when finishing the Sechta, you say, Hadran Allah Mesechas Gitin, Hadra Chalam, Daita Chalam Mesechas Gitin. That's how you leave a Mesechta. You don't just walk away. You say, you're a beautiful thing, Gitin. Hadran doesn't just mean, I'm going to go back and learn you again. That's part of what it means. We won't forget you. We hope to remember to come back and learn Gitin again. That's what we learned this winter, right, Gitin? Hadran also means Hadar. you're beautiful. And the source of that pshat, if you take a look at the Gemara in Sukkah, source number, this will end, source number Dalit, part two, after 7 days of circling the Mizbech on the Sukkahs, he circled the Mizbech 7 times on what we know as a Shana, but the 7th day Sukkah, that was the last time they had Hakafas, which is why we have 7 Hakafas around the Mizbech. And when they left the Mizbech, because now they were basically concluding this long, extended Beis HaMikdash ceremony. Basically, Sukkot is about Beis Hashem. Shemini Atzeres is the moving aside. You're still in the Beis HaMikdash, but not as intensely. So what did they say? Osayom, source Dalet, line 2, Makifin is Mizbech Shevapamim. They would circle it 7 times. B'shas Pitiros and Mayim Omrim. What did they say when they left? Guys who are leaving. What did they say when they left? Yofi Lecha Mizbech. Yofi Lecha Mizbech. Mizbech hurt feelings. They said, Yofi, Mizbech smiled at them, sent out an emoticon, thank you. LOL, Mizbech sent out laughing out loud. Mizbech is inanimate. It's for you. Yofi lecha Mizbech, Yofi lecha Mizbech, thank you. We so cherish, we have to go because Sukkot is over. But wow. Blazer Omer, Levalach Mizbech, Levalach Mizbech. To us and to you, Mizbech. Be bonded. Let's take it with us. So there's pending relevance, guys leaving yeshiva. Just be careful, you end with a bang, not with a bust. Make sure you're as intense. There's no excuses now, I'm going to burn out. Have to be careful, because I may burn out in a week. Excuse me for having, unfair. I'm getting used to these under-the-belt left hooks here. I'm afraid of burnout. It's the big modern Orthodox fear. My son's going to burn out in yeshiva. We're so afraid of burning out, we never begin to burn. No one burns because they're afraid of burnouts. And no one ever touches fire. No one ever gets passionate. They're afraid they're going to burn out. That's not such a... Most people come from healthy lives. If you told me you spent the first 17 years of your life in a monastery, on a mountain, looking over the ocean, thinking about God and religion, and waxing candles for the monks to light, pressing wine all day, and you never saw an automobile, and all of a sudden your life is so intensely wound up. Oh my goodness, we have to give them some variety and give them some healthy. Where have you been the last 17 years? Healthy, broad-based schooling, family development, vacation, internet, basketball team, soccer team, knitting team, basket weaving team, debate team, model UN team. That's what high school education is. A lot of nothing and everything of everything. A lot of this, a little of this, a little of that, and a great price you pay is excellence and nothing. A lot about everything. You did everything from anything, and nothing was done with deep and intense investment, because you have to diffuse your energies across 1,000 different planes. Okay, but at least now. But not just now. This is not a message for the next 2 weeks or 3 weeks. It's really a message. Walk away from Shavuos. Walk out of Shul. Really, I really want you to take this not figuratively, but literally. I promise you, if every time you leave a shul, and you leave the Beis HaMedrash, but you really mean it, that becomes a moment for you. Again, there are times you have to run and catch the bus, but if that's like a moment to, okay, this is my moment. I could be there, I can't, life's pulling me, but I could be Tinek HaBarech. Then I think you'll have a lot more success, and it's a lot more healthy than asking me which Masechta should I learn next year. A lot more healthy, these little things that are attitude adjusters that keep you in the right frame of mind than all these highfalutin, should I learn Tosfos or Tosfos HaRosh? Sometimes it's just these very practical things that can keep you very, very deeply rooted. So remember this Medrash. That's the first Peronis. The end Peronis is the Asafso from the Taiva. The first Peronis, Kitinok Shiyotzin Beis HaSefer. So Hashem had to insert Vahidin Sa'ar to make it a little bit more palatable. Don't be either. Don't be afraid of boring, repetitive monotony. That's where excellence and true achievement lies. Don't be a Hisavu Taiva. Don't be a Tinok Shiyotzin Beis HaSefer. Okay. Bar mitzvah.